took out. So, how can you rules of playing rule of football when you're playing? So, I said, it's ridiculous. Well, the rules of football are designed to be fair, and these rules are designed to be unfair.
But it's sad to see people from a government advocating surrender to foreign dominion for something as silly as access to a market. What total lack of priorities this shows.
But you know, since time has passed, people have changed different generations.
Yes, they're fools now. They're fools who think that a little bit of profit is more important than defending your freedom. Now, of course, the government of Vietnam doesn't allow anybody to have freedom at all. It's a horrible dictatorship, and they have a sort of silly form of so-called democracy. The people vote for a large number of candidates, and then the government picks the ones they like out of those, which means that basically the people get to vote and it doesn't affect anything. It can't change anything. It's all bullshit.
Yeah. You know, it's more than that. In fact, almost they vote for nothing because in the end, nobody looks at those votes. Who cares?
Right, exactly. It has no influence, so why bother even voting? But just because there is a non-democratic dictatorship, essentially, that doesn't mean democracy isn't right, and that doesn't mean human rights aren't right. That just means there's a problem. There's a problem in Vietnam, there's a problem in the U.S., there's a problem here, and in most countries, things are going badly. But this doesn't mean that people are different now and human rights don't matter.
Yes,
you plan to pursue and develop your kernel, GNU kernel.
Volunteers talk about working on it, but who knows if it will ever be any good.
So
it's not, but that's not crucial. You see, we've got a free kernel. We've got more than one. Although, in fact, here's an interesting thing. We are now maintaining a modified version of Linux, because Linux, as Torvalds maintains it, is not free software. There are pieces of it which are not free, and here's why. Supposedly they're released under the GNU GPL, but there's no real source code available. The supposed source code consists of thousands of hex constants. These are called binary blobs. They're in a file whose name is something.c. It supposedly is C source code, but it's not really the source code. It's obfuscated by being converted into binary numbers. And so Linux, as it's available from Torvalds' version, is not free software. That is, parts of it are not. So what we do is we delete those. And if you look in the free software directory, which is directory.fsf.org, you will find in there a pointer to the free version of Linux that doesn't have the blobs. This is another sign of the fact that Torvalds doesn't care about these ethical issues. And it's really sad. All the BSD distributions, I believe, they have a kind of port system, which contains recipes for installing various other programs, and some of those recipes are for installing non-free programs. So as I see it, that means the distribution is actually guiding you towards those non-free programs and helping you install them. Of course, it's always possible to install a non-free program from, you know, a general purpose system means you can do whatever you like, and that will include installing non-free programs. I don't think they should make that impossible, but when they put their seal of approval on it in that way, for me, that is what goes across the line. Mostly, I just use a text console because mostly what I do all day is edit text. Once in a while, I do something that's graphical, like look at a photo or play a game. And then I just use GNOME, which is the GNU desktop environment. And I use the window manager that comes with that, which I think is Metacity.
Yes. I have a question.
that you started your work in 1984, right?
Well, I announced it in 83 and started it in January 84.
Basically, I know that you left MIT Lab, or MIT Lab, right?
Yes.
So, what did you do for a living all these years?
Oh, well, in 1985, I sold copies of GNU Emacs. Remember, it's free as in freedom, but that doesn't mean it has to be best plot mode. So I sold copies of GNU Emacs on tape, and I charged $150 per copy. And I got about 8 to 10 orders per month, and that would have been enough for me to live on if necessary. But then, after that, in October 85, we started the Free Software Foundation. And it seemed to me that it was right for the foundation to sell these tapes. So the foundation started selling them and sold quite a lot of them, but I didn't get any money from that. You see, I'm the president of the foundation and I want to set an example for volunteers, so the FSF doesn't pay me. So that meant I wasn't getting any of the money from selling those tapes, so I had to do something else. And for the rest of the 80s, what I did was I took various consulting jobs, either improving free software or teaching classes about it. Then I got a fellowship that paid me, well, actually, I should mention that for the rest of the 80s, I found that I was making more money than ever before. And in fact, once I made enough money to spend for the year, plus an equal amount to save, plus an equal amount for taxes, I turned away work because I had better things to do. And I calculated that this took me 7 weeks of paid work per year.
To save money?
Well, to get three times what I needed to live on. So it was perfectly comfortable. It was almost as if I were rich. Right? What does it mean to be rich? If you're the kind of fool who is just hungry to have more money, then being rich doesn't really do you any good at all. But if you're not like that, being rich means you don't have to spend your time to get money. Well, I wasn't rich by most people's standards. I didn't have enough money to be rich, but I could live like a rich person because I didn't have to devote much of my time and effort to getting money. And part of that is because I lived cheaply, like a student. You know, I lived in one room. I've never owned a house. I've never owned a car, and I really don't want to own a house or a car. And the less money I can spend, the easier it is for me to make enough, which means the less I have to change my life to get money. I also have never had a child other than the free software movement. And the free software movement is the kind of child I want to have. So since 95, I make money from speeches. Now, some speeches I get paid for, some I don't, and that's fine.
Richard, how do you estimate the progress of free software community now, according to your wishes, that day when you started it?
Well, back in 1983, I didn't try to think that much about what the free software community would be like 20 years later, and probably I couldn't possibly have guessed. There are problems we have that I didn't imagine. I didn't imagine that we would become so successful in a very superficial way, and that our superficial success would get disconnected from the ethical ideals. So that causes various problems which I didn't imagine.
Could you explain, why do institutions such as David and Silver that allow this very popular program in the
Well, I can't speak for them, but what I see is there's certain jobs that lots of users like to do. And so they think, well, the users won't like the system if they can't do those jobs. We better give them something. And so they give them a non-free program. It depends on your priorities, on your values. Are you more interested in success today, or are you more interested in teaching people to value freedom? And this is crucial, because you can't, if you present the non-free program as a solution, implicitly you're saying it's not a problem.
But those distributions give you your choice.
I know they do, but the point is they present the non-free program as a solution. And by presenting it as a solution, they're saying that's not the problem. And that is working directly against our efforts to spread the idea that the problem is non-free software. Non-free software is wrong, and we should be aiming to get rid of it. If you present it as a solution to people, that works directly against what we are saying. So, what does that mean? First of all, we have to practice what we preach. We shouldn't be hypocritical. If we are hypocritical, it will defeat everything. So if I were to say with this hand, you should use only free software because non-free software takes away your freedom, and with this hand say, solve that problem by installing this non-free program, I'd be contradicting myself. They may not say so, but if so, they may just not talk about it.
However, you see, that running free operating system that contains one single non-free package is still better than running completely non-free.
Yes, it is better. The point is that when I say to people, what are we aiming for? Where can you get a free version of GNU/Linux? I can't recommend the distributions that come with non-free software. Because if I did, I would be contradicting the most basic thing I have to say to you. I agree, installing a system that's 99% free software is a big step up from Windows. And lots of people are doing that. The question is, how are we ever going to convince people to take the remaining step? What I see is millions of people who take the first step and then they don't take the remaining step because they don't see why. And the reason is that there are millions of people who use GNU/Linux and most of them don't think that non-free software is bad. They just think GNU/Linux is better because it's cheaper or more powerful or more convenient or more reliable, and they don't even talk about freedom.
So
it doesn't. Actually, that's a way of fooling yourself, and it doesn't even make sense because you just made it a matter of either it works or it doesn't, and those are two extremes. Whereas in practice, we often have a choice between a program that works somewhat better and a program that works not quite so well. And if suppose the program that works not quite so well is free and the other is proprietary, so which one do you choose? Well, that depends on your values. If you are used to thinking only about the practical questions, you'll choose the one that works better, even though it's not free, because you don't care. You've taught yourself not to pay attention to that. Whereas I will choose the free one. And I'll say to myself, if I am not satisfied with how reliable this program is, I could make it better, right? And I should. And if I don't have time to do that, then I should just live with it the way it is until I do. And if I can live with it, if I think something else is more important than fixing it, obviously, I think it works well enough then, right? And if I'm really dissatisfied and I get to the point where I say I can't stand having this crash every so often, well, I know what I can do about it. I could read the source code and I can fix it and make it not crash. So the point is that what you're saying is a sort of recipe to convince yourself to ignore the ethical side and do whatever is most convenient for you in the short term. And if we do that, we're going down a path that leads to a predictable place, which is lots of proprietary software. So I've seen where that path leads, and therefore I'm not going to go down it, and I'm not going to encourage other people to go down it. If we want to win freedom, we've got to say no to that. We have to go down the other path that says, we insist on freedom, and if we want the software to be better, well, let's make it better. I can't hear you.
Could you please comment on some of the students' plans to release their slaves or children that are peaceful?
I don't know the details of their plans. What I know is what they've done already. And basically, there's something called Open Solaris, which is most of the kernel of Solaris released as free software. It's released under a license which I don't like very much, but it is a free license. Now, it's what I'm told is that it's not complete and you can't actually run the free parts. Of course, somebody could write free code to go with it to make it a complete kernel, and that would be a nice thing to do. Meanwhile, I'm told you also need non-free software to build it at the moment. That's another problem which is fatal at present. It's ethically a fatal problem, but it can be corrected. You know, you could change it so that you could build it with GCC, or you could change GCC so it could build it, right? There are ways to fix these problems. Until they're fixed, they mean that it's at present it's no good. Well, lots of people did that. Well, I'd be glad if they do. I don't know for certain about their plans. I've heard that they were thinking about this, and I don't want to say what they're going to do since I do not know for certain. But I'll be very happy if they do that. But the most important thing, of course, is to deal with these two problems which right now make it unusable. It is free software. The part that is free, that's ethically okay. It's just that you can't build it with a... You need non-free software to add to it and to build it. Well, if they fix those two things, then it will be a free program you can really use. And if they re-release it under GPL version 3, that'll be nice too, but that's not the crucial thing that must be fixed.
It's
just
that system may attempt to.
Yes, but that's not the most important goal. My goal isn't to have everybody using the system I started. My goal is for everyone to have freedom. Now, all else being equal, encouraging more people to move to GNU/Linux is a good thing. The problem is that way of doing it does not make all else equal. Because when you encourage people to switch to the system by telling them that using it with non-free software is okay, you defeat the ultimate goal, which is to teach everyone to insist on freedom and thus win freedom. So that's why I do not want that solution, because that so-called solution is based on... It takes a sub-goal, and it focuses on that sub-goal, ignoring the main goal. The sub-goal is make a system that's popular and free, and they just focus on the popular part by making it not free.
Why don't we take it as a temporary solution?
What makes you think it would be temporary? Why would it ever cease to be temporary? Okay, here, I'm serious. You see, suppose I were to join in promoting these partly non-free systems as a temporary solution. Why would they be temporary? What makes you think people would ever get rid of that non-free software?
People keep developers provide.
But that's the point. Developers keep on providing non-free software. People shouldn't take whatever developers provide. We need to teach people to reject non-free software. If our community is full of people who think a non-free program is okay, unless it's technically inconvenient, then it will be full of people accepting the non-free programs, and why would we ever get rid of them? If we want people to get rid of these non-free programs, we have to teach a lot of people to see them as a problem. And that's what I'm working on. I'm teaching people to recognize these non-free programs as a problem. As not just as an inconvenience, but as a social problem, as an injustice, as something that cries out to be eliminated. And this, I'm hoping, will create the impetus to make the use of those non-free programs temporary. Because remember, starting in the 90s, when I spoke to the developers of distributions that contain non-free programs, and I said, you know, it's a bad thing that your distribution contains these non-free programs, they said to me, well, this is just temporary. Whenever you provide us with a nice free program, we will put it in and delete the non-free program. And what did that really mean? That meant, we hope you will replace this non-free program, but we're not going to help. So that was really just an excuse to refuse to take any responsibility. Well, what has happened? Those distros, some of them still exist. And the non-free programs that were in them in 1998, some of those are not in them anymore because people have developed free replacements. Meanwhile, they have put in other non-free programs. So although the presence of any one non-free program in those distros may be temporary, just like the life of any one person is temporary, right? People get born and others die, and so everybody eventually gets replaced by other people. But likewise for mosquitoes, you know, mosquitoes get born and mosquitoes die, and the existence of any one mosquito is temporary, but the problem of mosquitoes continues. And likewise, the presence of any one non-free program in those distros may be temporary, but the problem that there are non-free programs in those distros seems to be permanent. And the reason is they don't care. The most important thing that determines our future is our values. If our values treat a non-free program as okay, not a big deal, if it's convenient, then have it, or if they treat them as an okay way to achieve greater success, these values will lead us towards a future which is like the present. And I'm not just speaking from theoretical reasoning, this is what I've seen. I've been doing this for a long time. I have seen this happen. Our future depends on what we value. So if we want a future of freedom, we have to promote valuing freedom, and we have to act in accord with our values. Because if we just say it and we don't act it, people will see we're hypocrites and they won't be influenced by what we say. Unless we're big, powerful media like the television in Russia, which is all controlled by on the side of the government, right? Or the mass media in the U.S., which all works for the corporate empire. They're so loud they can get a bunch of people to do what they say. We're not so big and powerful. The only way we can influence anybody is if they see that we stand for something good and we really mean it. If I were to say to you that a non-free program, like suppose it were a driver for some piece of hardware, if I were to say that that was a good thing because it made our system more popular, I would contradict the most important things I'm saying to you. I would make everything fail. I would make it all worthless. Can't hear you. I can't hear you at all. Oh, bias. You have to speak louder. Can you project your voice? Because I'm hard of hearing. I have trouble recognizing consonants. So if you want me to understand, you have to pronounce every consonant very carefully. Okay, what about the BIOS? The BIOS is sort of at the edge. You see, there are some things that have software in them, but nobody installs software in them. The clearest example is a watch or a microwave oven. Now, maybe these have computers in them, which are running programs, but we don't really know. Because what we do know is we don't install any software in there. Nobody does. Even the manufacturer is very unlikely to ever do so, except perhaps when they first build it. So when I thought about this, which I did in around 1984 or 5, I concluded that may be implemented with a computer, but it's not functioning as a computer for the user. Therefore, it might as well be a circuit. We don't have to care about that. Now, when we first got GNU/Linux running on PCs, the BIOS was something in ROM, which you couldn't replace, as far as I knew. And it was many years ago that I found out that BIOSes could now be replaced. But still, people mostly don't do this. And so, I'm told that some people do this with old hardware that they're trying to make continue to work. Probably in the US, just about nobody ever does this. So this means that the BIOS is sort of in the gray area, in between being like the hypothetical software in the microwave oven and an operating system and applications which have to be free. So what does that imply? Well, we certainly should try to use a free BIOS. So with desktop machines and servers, there are models on sale now that run with a free BIOS. And in the Free Software Foundation, we only get those. Unfortunately, there is no laptop that you can buy that runs with a free BIOS. The only laptop ever that has run with a free BIOS is the OLPC. So I am trying to get an OLPC to switch to, and they've said they would deliver it. But that was 2 months ago, and I don't know what's wrong. But eventually, I hope I'll get it, and then I'll be using a free BIOS. Meanwhile, I keep working on trying to make laptops with free BIOS available for sale. So I've gone to various institutions and governments and urged them to aggregate their computer purchases so that if, for instance, they're going to buy 1,000 laptops during the year or 10,000, they should say, all right, we're going to have one negotiation to decide who we're going to buy these 1,000 or 10,000 laptops from. Who's going to make available a model with a free BIOS? Will you make one available? All right, we'll buy it from you. But we insist you have to sell it to the public as well for at least 6 months. Oh, that's the one that he lent me. It's in there somewhere. Maybe it's in here. I don't know. Maybe it's in here. I don't know where it is. What did my CD lend me? He lent me the phone. He's not calling. Here it is.
It's your chest.
Well, it's about time for me to leave. But I'll answer two more questions.
What are your relationship with Lawrence Lessig and Creative Commons?
Well, I support Creative Commons nowadays. There was a time I refused to support it because it had some licenses that I thought were so restrictive that they were not acceptable ever. But they got rid of those. Those were the licenses that failed to give everyone permission to redistribute exact copies non-commercially. All the Creative Commons licenses today give you that minimum essential freedom, which means I think they're all okay for art.
What will you do after an ultimate victory of free software?
Well, maybe I'll look for some other problem of human rights where people's rights are not being respected, and I'll try to campaign for those. Or maybe I will try to, maybe I'll have some other idea for how to make the world a better place. But as long as I'm capable, I'm going to keep trying to make the world a better place because, you know, I like to have some pleasures in life, but a certain amount of the day. But if all I did was amuse myself, I wouldn't be satisfied with that life. I want to be trying to solve important problems.
What are you going to do for this person?
I don't know. Well, I'll answer the whole
thing. Will it be possible to license any sequences under the
program? Sorry, license what?
Any sequences, SMGs.
I don't know. They're not copyrightable. Not much, actually. And the reason is that the thing that translates a gene into protein is pretty damn complicated and not entirely understood. And the thing that then determines what that protein is going to do, or the many things it might do, because it might do various different things, that's even more complicated. So it's not really like programming, and the laws that apply are different. You know, a particular program's code can't be patented. Only general ideas can be patented. But a particular gene can be patented. So the laws are different. Copyright law is not at all like patent law. They do totally different things. The rules are different. You can't transfer anything from copyright to patent. Nothing goes across because they're just too different.
But the seven seeds and cultures are different.
Yes, they are.
So we can start from overseas to come to this.
I would call it svoboda, not open. You have to talk about freedom if you want other people to care about freedom.
What's your personal relationship when the combined licenses for licenses with exceptions, such as general public license, what exception?
With what exception? I can't hear that. But, you know, we designed GPL version 3 to explicitly authorize and clarify the meaning of these exceptions. So it's okay to use them when you want to.
What about the future of
I'm not sure. There's still going to be one.
What about compatibility between GNU free document license and Creative Commons that you wish to share alike?
That's impossible, unfortunately. They're just too different.
Do you believe free
I can't hear you.
Do you believe free confine is real?
I don't think it's meaningful today, and the reason is that we don't have the technical means to freely modify and copy hardware. Our ability to do so is constrained by lack of technology. So if we had the technology necessary to copy and change hardware, if we could do that only with the same way we can with software, then free hardware would be absolutely essential for the same reason free software is. But that's not the case today. Now, therefore, I think the thing to do is think about this just a little bit, be aware that this is a possible future issue, and if it becomes necessary due to advances in technology, then I hope those same advances in technology will also make it possible, because it's not really feasible today. On the other hand, you can make a free hardware design today. I think that's a good thing to do. I think that with today's technological context, we don't need to insist on running only hardware made from free designs. It's not crucial, because we couldn't change that hardware or copy it anyway. But when we can copy and change that hardware, or when we have the machinery to build our own copies of hardware from the free designs, then having free designs will be essential. Anyone else who hasn't asked a question?
You tell us that all software should be free, but maybe we should let user to make choose between free and proprietary.
No. Well, I mean, I can't stop you.
If a user itself wants to use proprietary, he don't want freedom, he don't want to know what's in this code.
Well, that's two different things. Those are two different things. First of all, I can't stop people from using proprietary software. I do try, in the long-term sense, to work for the elimination of that non-free software. So if a user says to me he doesn't agree with me, and he loves proprietary software and hopes that people develop lots of it, what can I say? Well, first of all, I say that he has a right to his views, and I respect his right to his opinion, and then I say that I'm not going to alter my activities one tiny bit just because he disagrees with me. Because although I recognize his right to have different views from mine, I don't act in order to satisfy him. Because I think he's wrong. I think he's foolish. Now, I can't make him change his mind. I wouldn't try, if I could, force him to think differently. But I'm going to do what I think is right, not what he thinks is right. I think we need freedom. And I think we should work to win freedom. And if he is disappointed, tough.
Вы хотите попасть на второй день?